We are ready to resume now.
Okay. And are we recording both on FTR and Zoom?
Yes, we've actually been recording on Zoom this whole time, unfortunately.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's fine. As long as we're capturing everything. All right. Mr. Hoffner, you may proceed.
Okay, perfect. So,
apologies, everyone.
Not a problem. The applicant requests approval of a conditional use permit to construct an 896-square-foot additional dwelling unit in an existing detached garage that was approved under permit number 23-05187. The applicants, Corrigan Michael and Moira A. Trustees, completed the CUP ADU application on January 4th, 2026. The SEPA comment period occurred concurrently with a notice of application dated January 29th, 2026. And the SEPA appeal period expired February 12th of 2026. No appeals were filed, therefore the SEPA determination is final. This is a 19.56 acre parcel located in Seebeck neighborhood. It is irregular in shape and orients north to south with Lake Ludvick to the south. West Lake Ludvick Lake Drive, a county-maintained road that provides direct access to both the primary residence and the proposed ADU. Thanks. Zoning for this parcel in Seebeck is rural wooded with a density of one dwelling unit per 20 acres. The site includes three on-site wetlands, two off-site wetlands, on-site category three wetlands with a fish-bearing stream and areas of erosion and seismic hazards. Review of approval for the structure was done under that previous permit, 23-05187. No expansion is proposed in this development. The applicants propose converting an existing detached garage loft to 896 square foot ADU. The applicants provide two additional parking spaces for a total of four with their primary. The existing garage is being converted to an ADU is 750 feet from the primary residence with a separate septic system. Kitsap County Code 17-415-015B4 provides for the exception to convert an existing structure from the 150 rule generally proposed for ADUs in the rural comment, rural areas. No comments were received. Applicants' request for a detached ADU in the rural wooded zone requires a conditional use permit. We use the following code citations for our review, and the proposal meets these code sections. The following comprehensive plan goals and policies are most relevant to this application. These goals and policies are met since the proposed development meets the rural residential goals and the environmental impacts were mitigated. To conclude, the Department of Community Development recommends the approval of a conditional use permit for an additional dwelling unit as conditioned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hoffner. I do not have any questions for you. Is the applicant present? Okay. It does not. And actually, Ms. Jones, let me have you check online to see if the applicant is online. Okay.
The applicant is online, so I'm going to go ahead and promote them to a panelist so they can talk.
Okay.
Hi, this is Mike.
Hi, is that Mike Corrigan speaking?
Yes.
Good afternoon. Was there anything that you would like to add to the planning department's summary of your proposal?
No, I think you covered it well. I don't think I have anything relevant to add.
Okay. Well, I do not have any questions for you, so we'll turn this to public comment. Is there anyone in the hearing room who would like to comment on the proposal or online, either way? And I'm not seeing anyone in the hearing room. Ms. Jones, is there anyone online?
There is no one online who wishes to comment on this project.
Okay, let the record reflect there's no one who would like to comment on this proposal. So as I mentioned earlier, the applicant is required to demonstrate consistency with the ADU Pacific criteria as well as the conditional use permit criteria. I have reviewed the exhibits and believe that the applicant has demonstrated consistency with these criteria. So I will be approving this ADU. Decision will be out within 10 business days. That will be emailed to the planning department and then forwarded on to the applicant and anyone else who requests a copy. Mr. Corrigan, do you have any procedural questions?
No, not at this time.
All right. Well, you are more than welcome to stay online for the next agenda item, but we have completed review of your ADU proposal, so there is no need for you to do so if you have other things you wish to do.
Thank you very much. Take care.
All right. Okay, so at this point, we will move to the second item on the agenda today. This is the Royal Valley Preliminary Plat and Performance-Based Development. As noted earlier, I have received Exhibits 1 through 39, which are all admitted. That includes the staff report, and then, as I noted earlier, a couple comments that came in yesterday. So I'll turn first to the Planning Department. You can step up to the podium, and I'll swear you in. Yes, is there a procedural question from the audience?
Yes.
If you could step up to the podium so we can hear you real quick.
Good morning. My name is Joseph.
Oh, you need to turn the microphone on so we can make sure we catch you. Yes.
Good morning. My name is Joseph Lubisher from Indianola. There is an email sent in yesterday requesting postponement.
Oh, of the hearing. Okay, I did see that. That was, I think, one of the comments that was admitted.
And according to the clerk, that was placed in the exhibits.
Yes, that has been placed in the
Should that be dealt with first?
We're going to go ahead and hold the hearing, so I'm not going to postpone the hearing, but I would like to hear comment on that proposal because I can always keep the record open. So although I'm not going to hold the hearing in full, I can keep the record open, which serves a similar function. And if I could get the spelling on your last name?
Lubischer.
Okay. All right. Okay, so we'll turn back to the planning department. All right, good morning. If you can state your name for the record.
My name is Jeff Smith.
And you swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, you may proceed when you are ready.
Okay. My name is Jeff Smith. I'm representing the Department of Community Development on this project. This proposal will provide additional single-family housing for the citizens of Kitsap County. I have experience reviewing these projects for over 20 years, and I'm going to present the proposal. So the request today is for Royal Valley Land LLC properties to subdivide 65.38 acres called Royal Valley Area 2, or some people call it Phase 2, through a preliminary plat and a performance-based development. The subdivision will create 52 single-family properties. That includes 27 townhomes, 7 cottages, 18 detached traditional single-family lots. In addition to that, this development will include 276 multifamily units. And then there's the option of including 40 additional units later and so that would be a total of approximately 328 units. The property is approximately, was it 32.36 acres of wetlands, streams, buffers, and open space. And that's included with the and reviewed under chapter 16.14 of the subdivision code and 17.450 of the performance-based development requirements. So the performance-based development is to request for flexibility to lot standards, that includes lot size, setbacks, and building height. And what this does is allows property to be, or the development within a development property to be clustered and provides more flexibility. And one of the things it does is it allows the developer to have more efficiency as far as extending public facilities and infrastructure. The subdivision will include associated public and private roads, include public facilities, utilities, and those serve the individual lots. This is a type 3 application. The hearing examiner is the review authority, and the review, the project is reviewed for consistency with Title 16, Title 17, primarily pursuant to Title 21 land use and development procedures. The the applicant submitted the application and it was determined complete September 21st, 2023, and for the performance-based development. And then the preliminary plat was declared complete in September 7th, 2023. And those are vesting dates when the project vested under Kitsap County Code. The first notice of application was circulated November 7th, 2023. And then today's proposal, the revised project, the notice of application was issued January 31st, 2025. The county used the optional DNS process and included public comment from the public. Each time we allowed for a 14-day SEPA comment period. And as well as through the whole process, the county accepted comments from the public through this whole process. The department issued mitigated determination of non-significance on March 16th, 2026. The appeal period ended March 30th, and there are no appeals filed. So therefore, it's the SEPA determination is final. The property is located in central Kitsap. It is just east of Silverdale. It's located off of SR 303, which is also called Wagga Way. It's in Commissioner District 1 because it's north of Wagga Way. So the property is located at 368 Northeast Wagga Way. As you can tell from the aerial map, the property is surrounded by similar, farming uses, ag uses, which the property was previously operated as a farm. Next. Okay. The property is zoned urban cluster residential. And to the north is urban restricted, and that's 1 to 5 dwelling units per acre. Urban restricted, urban cluster residential is 5 to 9 dwellings per acre, and the rural residential is outside that outside the urban growth area, and that's 1 dwelling, 5 acres. And there's a variety of parcels abutting the development that range from 1 acre up to 14 acres in size. As far as just some general history on this project, is that this property was originally part of a 154-acre farm that was operated for a significant amount of time. It's been noted that this has been farmed for since 1909. The Ross family owned it for over 50 years. This project or this property was added to the urban growth area in 2012, and it was proposed as a senior living homestead, which allowed 5 to 9 dwellings per acre. And it was going to be operated as like 55 years and older. It was included as urban cluster residential development in 2016. And it's similar, most similar to the retirement community that Mr. Ross was anticipating. Portions of this area, of part of the central part of the development was rezoned to urban restricted in 2020, and this was to reflect the rural development in the area. So as outlined on the map, this includes, I think we jumped ahead on a slide there. There you go. That there's a variety of critical areas on the property. However, the critical areas are located around this subject development. The property includes hydric soils, includes soils that are like a seismic hazard area, includes 10 jurisdictional wetlands, 4 surface waters, and includes Royal Valley Creek, Crouch Creek, Insanity Creek Lake, and a type N, non-fish stream. There is geologic hazard areas on the property, but the development is excludes that. That's mostly in the Nadine Park Creek recreation area. The preliminary plat receives access from State Route 303, Wagga Way. And it receives access on 2 points on the state highway, and then will receive access off of the off of Brownsville Highway. These intersections have been reviewed and approved by Washington State Department of Transportation. And also, the developer has entered into an agreement with Washington State Farm Transportation and Kitsap County to develop out the project as agreed upon with the state. The state has reviewed traffic generation or traffic analysis for this project, and has accepted the findings based on what the applicant has provided. As far as peak hour trips and looking at turning movements, site distance, and far as ingress off the site. So the developer provided additional analysis based on the apartments, based on the proposed level of service with the apartments. And it was determined with the apartments, the actual trip generation would be less. Because typically, single-family homes have an average daily rate of 10 trips per day. And the actual apartments generate less traffic. And also make it clear is that Paulson Road hasn't changed. Under the first phase or Area 1, that project conditioned that Paulson Road would not be opened up for urban traffic. It's only used for fire apparatus access, and it's a condition on in the hearing examiner's approval, and it will be on that note will be placed on the face of the final plat. So if you look at the different colored areas, the pink areas are the single family homes. Those are on the outside edges. In the center is the multifamily development. And most further to the east is the clubhouse. And that's going to be a single story clubhouse of about 5,000 square feet. It'll include a fitness center. Exterior pool includes a pickleball or tennis court, and it also includes off-street parking. So it's mainly to serve the people who live within that community. Next. So this slide shows the breakdown of how the project's going to operate far as the amount of open space, the amount of developed area. The project is required to have 15% open space under the performance-based development standards. However, this project includes 21% of the area landscape, but overall the project includes the critical areas as far as wetlands, streams, and their associated buffers, and it comes out to be about 70% of the site is going to be in critical.
What percent of the site?
Approximately 70. So based on our review, this is the applicable regulations that we reviewed the proposal. And this includes from the road standards, Title 12 as far as stormwater standards, subdivision standards, and Title 16. Also zoning land use code requirements in Title 17. And I think that as far as some of the significant ones too is the Title 19 critical areas and wetlands, as far as dealing with buffer averaging, etc. So the applicant has prepared a significant amount of analysis of this site, and and they followed the mitigation sequencing to avoid, minimize, and mitigate. And it doesn't, the proposal does include enhancement, and in some areas there's restoration, i.e. far as through the center of this project. There was a need to improve the culvert underneath the connector road. And so that included replacement in kind and also doing buffer restoration on both sides of the roadway. So as identified, there are 10 jurisdictional wetlands within the plat, and the, as far as the project assessment looks at or identified the Hoot Creek, Crouch Creek, Insanity Lake Creek, Nadine Creek, and a lot of these are fish streams. And then there's only one pretty much that stream that is a non-fish stream, which has been analyzed by the state as well as the tribe. So the department received over 200 pages of public comments. There has been a significant amount of public discourse on this project. And so the public comments can, I think, can be broken up into four areas: impacts to groundwater resources, traffic safety, cumulative impacts to the operation of State Route 303 traffic facility. There's concerns about urban impacts on the surrounding rural character. And then the application of the Kitsap County Code as far as Title 19 for critical areas. Those are all included in the staff report as far as the statements and then the analysis on each of these issues. And in addition, there is concerns about the aquifer recharge. There is a wellhead adjacent to this project. It's a well owned by North Prairie Water District. And however, in Title 19, 600, it identifies uses that are susceptible to groundwater contamination. However, a preliminary plat at this time, based on Kitsap County Code, it does not identify that as a potential threat to groundwater contamination. Those are uses that, like wrecking yards, dry cleaners, et cetera. So based on the preliminary plat PVD, Kitsap County views these criteria for granting types of land use segregation. It's appropriate to provisions made for public safety and general welfare. And there is the proposed land segregation shall comply with applicable provisions of the comprehensive plan. It does. It's consistent with the comprehensive plan and policies. Is there adequate access to each of the lots and to the development? Yes, that's been reviewed and is just determined that it's consistent with Kitsap County Code, Title 11, as well as the agreement with Washington State Department of Transportation. As far as safe walking conditions, the developers provided ample sidewalks throughout the site, providing safe walking facilities, and providing adequate sidewalks on the both sides of the roads. The lot configuration is consistent with far as the right angles and there's not creating non-conforming lots. And as far as the homeowners association, the developer will set up a homeowners association through the CC&Rs as far as who will be participating in that provide maintenance of open space and critical areas within the plat. So based on staff's determination, the project is consistent with the comprehensive plan and goals and policies. It's consistent with county regulations in the appropriate titles and is based on what is being proposed with the performance-based development and the associated buffers. It is consistent with the character of the surrounding vicinity, and it should not be materially detrimental to the health and safety of the area. We recommend approval.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. I do not have any questions for you at this time. All right, so at this point, we'll turn to the applicant. Is the applicant present?
The applicant's representatives are present.
Okay. Good morning. When you get settled, if you can state your name for the record.
Okay. Yeah, my name is Norm Olson, NL Olson and Associates.
All right.
Project engineer.
And you swear or affirm to tell the truth and a penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
I do.
Thank you. You may proceed when you are ready.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, today for the applicant team, mm-hmm. we have myself and Steve Yester is the applicant.
Steve, say the last name again.
Yester, Y-E-S-T-E-R. Mm-hmm. He's with Rush, and the applicant is Royal Valley Land LLC. Mm-hmm. We have Robin Myers is somewhere out there. She's the biologist, and... And then Bill Lynn is the applicant's counsel. And then Ron Johnson is an engineer from our office. He's here as well.
Okay.
And they may or may not be testifying. Now, one thing we need to do is, I guess I should back up and say that, we appreciate Jeff Smith's, the planner's, presentation and the staff report and all the time that's gone into it. I mean, yes, there's been a lot of public comments about it, but this has been going on for years. I mean, if you look at the application number, you can tell. So there's been plenty of time for comments. What I'm going to do here is there's a few conditions out of the 75. There's seven conditions that we want to make clarifications, and I'm going to hand out what those are, and then we have them on the disc as well.
And I should probably make that an additional exhibit then, so that would become exhibit 40. This will be it. Okay.
Yeah, and I will go over. I'm not going to some of them are long to read. I'm not going to read them, but they're not substantive changes, but they're important, and you'll see why they're important when I go through each one, what they're about.
Okay.
And then I'm also going to address the latest comments that were received. I'm going to address some of that, and I think Robin, the biologist, may as well be doing that.
Thank you. Thank you. And for the public, I think the exhibits will be online. Is that
I can make the exhibits available to anyone who requests them.
Okay, so the public can have access to that. We'll just figure out the easiest way for that.
Oh, that's all right. Before we get into the exhibit, I'd like to state about a clarification in the staff report. I think on page 33, item number 13, it calls the project a CUP. But,
oh, right. Yeah, I saw that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so can I point or can I point? So other exhibits I have on that desk are environmental ones that that Robin Myers may be asking to use, but I think since she's in the online, she can probably bring her own up.
Just to clarify, are there other exhibits besides the 40 that need to be entered into the record?
Well, I don't know that this needs to be. This is just a talking point.
This is illustrative for your, okay.
Yeah, I don't think this needs to be.
Okay.
As far as the other, there, I think there's going to just be clarifications.
Okay.
One of the issues that is brought up in the latest comment about wanting to postpone the hearing is saying that the civil plan set was not updated correctly, that if we look at the exhibit table, number 30, that comment brings up exhibit number 30, which is the civil plan set, and you can see that it says it's dated 6/10/25, and then the date approved is 2/11/26. So, and then they made comment about that it's not been updated correctly. Well, only the cover sheet right there, what you're looking at, that sheet right there is the only one that was updated in February of 2026. So the stamp on that one is different than the rest of the sheets.
Okay.
And they're all still stamped in June of 2025. So, there's nothing wrong with, when we submitted it, we noted that that's the only one that was changed. Thank you for putting that up. Okay, so the reason I have this exhibit up is to show the overall, how the overall site is working, because there was, over the period of when we started with Royal Valley Phase 1, that's a plat for 144 lots that's under construction and almost receiving final plat approval for Phase 1 or Division 1. And you see that is RV1 up there. And then over to the east, all the way over, is Glude's Ponds Apartments. Those are 212 apartment units. So those are under construction.
Could you point to where the apartments are again you had mentioned?
Okay, thank you.
Glude's Ponds. Okay, yep.
So RV1, or Royal Valley 1, Phase 1. This is our Area 1 is what we call it, and that's a preliminary plat for 144 units. And like I said, it's in two divisions, and Division 1 is almost a final plat. And then Glude's Pond is apartments is an outright permitted use, just straight to site development activity permit, and you know that is under construction as well. So that all that's left for this entire site is, you know, Royal Valley Area 2. And that's what this preliminary plat performance-based development is the final part of it. And as far as the conditions, well, let me show you the, as Jeff had noted, right there is the access to Paulson Road is only emergency vehicle. It's not going to be open for the public, and the comment that wants to postpone the hearing talks about that WashDOT is not has not said that they're concurrent with the or shown concurrency with what's going on this, and they're not they have not approved this, which is not the case. This has, for the public, there's three locations where the public will be entering and exiting this site or this project, and the one to the west is already constructed pretty much and is going to be approved by WashDOT, and it allows traffic to come in with a right in and right out, and then also a left in. And then the one farther over is, and this one, like I said, was approved. There was a development agreement with WashDOT. It was reviewed significantly.
And this, that's the one off SR-303.
Yeah, this one is going to be on SR-303 as well. And it's going to be after significant amount of discussion and negotiation with WashDOT, they decided that it's going to be a right in, right out only. And so if you look at those two intersections, you say, well, how would anybody get to Bremerton if they wanted to leave the project? So that's why WashDOT's idea was to, and the county, was to open up Glutes Pond Road again. It used to be open with full access. Now it's just going to be a one-way out to allow people to leave to go to Bremerton. So with these three intersections and, you know, WashDOT's overall approval of, you know, how this all operates, they've been intimately involved. So, you know, the comments saying that WashDOT doesn't know what's going on, they haven't approved, I mean, they're intimately involved. The second one is in plan for approval stage right now, with WashDOT reviewing it, and it's almost approved. So that, I guess, talking about the roads now, I put an A on this road. It's hard for me to hold this stick.
If you
steady.
Can kind of describe it too, just for the record, because it's just a audio recording.
Yeah, there's two roads on. That are in this site, Road A and Road E, that will be public. And if you look in the staff report, under condition number, the conditions that we're modifying a little just to make it correct. Condition number 47 and condition number 48. So. Condition number 47, it says that all interior roads will remain private. So we are modifying that to say that, you know, except for Road A, which is lineage of road, that's the name, and Road E, which is Hartstone Road, which are to be dedicated to the public consistent with the approved SDAP plans and the other applicable conditions, all internal roads will be private. They can be changed over to public in the future, but immediately with the recording of this plat and the recording of Phase 1, Royal Valley Area 1, Road A, is going to be public. And Road A will be public even when this plat is in preliminary plat stage, or approval, assuming it is, because we're dedicating the right-of-way to Public Works. And it's ready to be dedicated and recorded as soon as Phase 1, Area 1, Division 1, is recorded. They'll be done at the same time. So Road A will be public at that time. Then Road E, when this plat is recorded, it will be public. So that's why those two conditions, 47 and 48, need to be revised. It's just a minor change. Can we go to back to the overall? Okay, so the next conditions, two conditions that need to be tweaked a little are regarding the HOAs. And if you look on this map and you see where it says CH, the clubhouse, right there, yep. And then you look at where it says forest and I drew a tree, that's a tree. That's 18.
Right, yeah, see your tree.
That's 18 acres of beautiful, beautiful forest that the applicant is. It has trees that are maybe 8 feet in diameter. Giant trees, and that forest is going to be, open space and for use for the public. Now, Jeff Smith touched on the fact that the HOA will be formed to oversee this happening, the clubhouse in the forest, and then the other amenities. But what's important is that this we're modifying the two conditions for the HOA because it's not only Royal Valley Area 2 that these amenities are going to serve; it's Royal Valley Area 1. And Glued's apartments. So we had to tweak the conditions to allow that to happen, not just this preliminary plat performance-based development.
Okay, and which condition is that?
Those are conditions 14 and 15.
Okay.
And then lastly, there's conditions about how to protect the buffers and with split rail fence and signage, and the way the condition is currently written is not in it's conflicting with the way it was written for Royal Valley Area 1. And if you look, can you zoom out that all the way? I just want to point out that the amount of buffer, if you look how there's forest and pasture and buffer or critical areas on both sides, as Jeff had said, it's encompassed. And if you were to add up the entire length of critical areas buffers on this site, it's significant. So there was an agreement for Royal Valley Area 1 that on how to do the split rail fencing and the signage, and that needs to be applied to this as well. So one of the conditions, the remaining three that are being revised is...
And that would be, 38, 40, and 41?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and... and I guess when I just really want to stress the point that there's miles of buffers if you count it all up, and the amount of mitigation, the amount of impacts that we're making for a little culvert replacement and for a little encroachment in a buffer here, or it would be the fraction of the entire buffer for this site. It's just a a tiny fraction of a less than a percent. And I wish now I would have made that calculation. But so Robin, I believe she's going to clarify a couple things about the and she might touch on those conditions, those three. Other than that, I think for now, unless you have questions now.
Not at this time. I don't have questions.
Okay.
I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. So I think at this point, unless there's anything further, we'll turn for public comment, and then there will be an opportunity for the applicant to address comment, which you're writing.
Okay. All right.
Okay. All right. So at this point, we will turn to public comment. As noted earlier, make sure your email is on the sign-in sheet if you have a good email to send the decision to. Also, when you testify, if you can note your address so I kind of have a sense on where you reside in relation to the property, that would be helpful. And then I'll probably limit comment to roughly 3 to 5 minutes. We have a decent sized crowd, but it's not too much, so probably maybe closer to 5 minutes. So I'll set a kind of a stopwatch on that. And I think with that, we can either go from the sign-in sheet. With that might okay. We will go from the sign-in sheet. So whoever is the first person?
First we have Bob Allpress.
Nope.
Okay. Next we have. Battaglini. Okay. All right. Next we have Carrie Meyer. Okay. Next we have Mandy Owens. Okay.
Good morning, Ms. Owens. I don't have the sign-in sheet just in front of me, so if you could spell your name for me.
Mandy Owens, and the last name is O-E-N-S.
O-E-N-S, okay. And you swear affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. And then did you wish to provide an address? I kind of have a sense on where you are.
I am located right off of Glutes Pond, immediately right next to the apartments.
Okay.
So I'm here to express the impacts and safety of the rural residential property adjacent to the Royal Vale development and the effects it's had on my property value and the livelihood of my business. Not only has this massive apartment complex with three-story buildings been built 50 feet off my property line with no sight obscuring screen, no buffer to give us privacy, there's been no enforcement so far to help us with the security fence that is along our property line.
And the security fence is the one you own, or?
There's a fence that's along the property line. There's an old fence that held the cows back. It's a barbed wire fence. They finished the portion that was next to the apartments, but have yet to finish the one that goes completely back to the corner that is eventually going to be near open space. There's a pond.
Okay.
But they connected the fence to the pond.
So part of it's completed and part of it's not.
Yeah.
Okay.
As far as the agreement with the road construction and the development, the egress, the ingress to Highway 303 and the opening of glue ponds, the developer, DCD, washed out have been making decisions independently of each other, and our community has not been provided with any solid plan for the roads that consider safety a top priority. Each agency is communicating different, and it's laid chaos and confusion at my doorstep and surrounding neighbors. The discrepancies with the traffic flow for the egress and ingress into this massive development have affected my home-based business, which depends regular deliveries by large trucks and trailers. Most of the vehicles, I have a sign and graphics business. I do a lot of graphics on big trucks and trailers. I drive a truck and trailer. We get a lot of deliveries. And the way that it is planned right now to be able to go in and out of Glutes Pond is to a right turn in and a right turn out. The only access for my trucks to be able to get to my property would be to go up to the light and make a U-turn, which is not viable. That's not a safe, and I don't know how we would be rerouted. So I'm concerned that the delivery trucks will experience delays, blocked access, or may no longer be able to safely reach my property at all. These trucks cannot safely make the U-turn. Like I said, this would make a serious hardship and affect me and my family. So from what I understand, the first hearing examiner discussion for the Royal Valley Development laid out conditions to the road construction and permitting which were not tracked, followed, or enforced, and may have led us to our current state of mass confusion over roads. I respectfully ask the hearing examiner to review that original decision and put a memorandum in place so that these issues can carefully be reevaluated for the traffic impacts of this project, including the ability of commercial delivery vehicles, emergency vehicles, and existing residents to safely access Glebe Pond and the already built apartments that still have no viable access. I also request that meaningful mitigation measures be required before approval, including roadway improvements, traffic studies based on realistic future use, and projections for existing habitat and the salmon streams. We live along a corridor. There's a stream that's behind my house, and Glutes Pond was closed many years ago because of the accidents, fatal accidents. And then they built the salmon stream. Glutes Pond, I understand that it's going to be opened. It may need to be resurfaced. I have not heard of any word that is approved. And it is right on top of a salmon stream. I had deer in my yard yesterday. They don't know where to go. Like, they used to travel through the farms and the areas, and so they're getting blocked in. I had baby geese. Like, they come up from the estuary, and they have nowhere to go. Like, it hits the apartments, and I don't know. So basically, my issues are with the safety of me being able to get in and out of my property. I mean, the fence, and I mean, I'm looking at a three-story apartment building 50 feet off my property, and I don't have any trees for privacy. So that's pretty much what I have to say.
Thank you, Ms. Owens.
Thank you.
Okay.
Next, we have Cindy Allpress.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ms. Allpress, I believe you have a comment in the record, but so I have your spelling, but if you could just go ahead and...
Cindy Allpress, it's A-L-L-P-R-E-S-S.
P-R-E-S-S, okay. And you swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
I do.
Thank you. And where in the area do you reside? And either address or just kind of so I have a sense.
Our property, our farm, we have a family farm that's been there for three generations. And it is on the west, abuts the west boundary line on the
west,
Royal
the west
Valley project.
Line. Okay.
We're closer to the phase one area.
Okay.
Phase one was done years ago, and apparently there were some notices sent out, and I think people didn't really understand what was going on there, but everything was approved. The grading permit was approved to pretty clear cut that entire area, that which used to be a farm, and I have to take exception to with what the planner has mentioned, that this project is now going to be similar to the what the Ross family had in mind with a senior living complex.
Mm-hmm.
This is totally different. So I like I say, I've seen a lot of discrepancies with what Mr. Smith has brought up, and I guess that's what we would like to be able to clarify some of there, get some clarification on these things. Based on the issues of phase one of this project, the Central Valley community has no confidence that DCD has control over the Royal Valley development. A Department of Environmental, the DOA inspection report number WAR311418.
Can you go a little slower on that?
Huh?
Can you go a little slower on that?
Oh, sorry. Okay. It's an inspection report. WAR311418, dated September 4th, 2025. From Evan Dabrowski, shows multiple violations, stormwater control failures, and work stoppages. This is just going on in phase one. During phase one, DCD did not enforce the landscape requirements called out in their administrative staff reports, the project narratives, the Kitsap County Code 17.500.027, emails from the DCD Acting Director David Kinley in April of 2024, or the Kitsap Comprehensive Plan's goals and objectives. They've completely ignored those objectives, and since these regulations were not enforced by DCD, we have no reason to believe that they are able to enforce regulations for phase two. By approving an urban cluster in the middle of rural residential zone, Kitsap DCD did not ensure the compatibility of differing land zones as noted in their own codes and directives. This once quiet rural area has forever changed into a small city with no infrastructure upgrades to handle the increase in population and traffic. And they claim that with all these apartments, it's the traffic isn't going to be significant. But there's no there's no buses, you know, there to take care of these 700 apartments plus the 11
there's
buildings.
There's not a nearby bus route. Is that what you're saying?
Pardon?
There's not a nearby bus.
There might be a bus run up on Central Valley Road, but there's, you know, there's going to be a lot of additional traffic brought into this area, and they're not looking at the impact. 303 is already. Anyway, they're just. This needs to be looked at. Now, when the density is in compliance with the urban cluster zoning, this developer is proposing to double the density of their original proposal to 278 apartments. And then you add in the 11 apartment buildings east of that. According to phase two MDNS dated 3/16/2026, the following discrepancies are of note. There's no environmental impact study. There's no hydrological study, no current geotechnical report. Buffer requirements are again ignored. North Perry water availability is in question now. The Central Kitsap wastewater treatment plant is out of compliance, and I have information on this. I'll just, okay, if yeah, I can give you, can oh, I give
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going to keep the record open. So, I mean, if you have additional material, I'd like to enter into the record now or later.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, the wastewater treatment plant, and this has to do with not just Rural Valley, but there's about 20 developments going in and around our area, the apartment buildings, and DCD just seems to be approving whatever comes across their desk. So, and regarding the traffic, the SCJ traffic impact analysis being used for this project is 2.5 years old. It's January 2024, and it contains many inconsistencies and discrepancies. I didn't go into a lot of things here because I thought I just had, I didn't know if I had 2 or 3 minutes. But WashDOT is planning to install a traffic circle near the entrance of this development to remove the fish barriers, but Kitsap, DCD, and WashDOT don't seem to appear to be working together to address these impacts on 303 being brought about by the onslaught of development approvals in this area. There's just such a lack of respect for the local community here, which was rural farms. And, you know, back in, when was it, 2016, they all of a sudden turned that area into urban cluster. And it's just been devastating to us property owners there. And, you know, we asked years around that time if they would just leave. All we asked is that they left a buffer, leave some trees between our rural farms and this urban cluster. But it wasn't considered at all. They did not, they have not followed their buffer requirements, which I've got information here on that in their landscape plans. That there's supposed to be a site obscuring screen. They could have left. They could have remained some of those trees there. There was some beautiful, like, say, you know, 8-foot cedars. But they've made it all better by planting some little, you know, 18-inch saplings between our properties now. So anyway, let me just say, and there's a lot of traffic issues coming not just because of Royal Valley, but all the other developments around there. Anyway, our feeling is that if DCD is unable to provide oversight on these projects and on like phase one, then there needs to be a pause on permit approvals, which we did back in July. We submitted a petition with over 1,100 signatures from the community asking for a pause until they address the infrastructure, lack of infrastructure to accommodate all these developments. We still are waiting for a response from the commissioners on that. So anyway, my time's limited, I know, so, but I will give you a little backup information here, and I appreciate you hearing our side of the story.
Thank you, Ms. Allpress. If you could actually, well, yeah, go ahead. You can give. Do you have a copy, though, for the clerk?
I think I do. I think I have another copy.
Yeah, if it's the, as long as it's the exact one, it's more important that she has it because then she can give it to me and every, yeah. Okay, check on that. For right now, this is a comment from Ms. Allpress, and this will be Exhibit 41.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so let's just make sure we, otherwise I'll give this to a clerk. So, yeah, okay. All right.
Next for the hearing room, we have Joseph Lubischer.
Okay, Mr. Lubischer, I think you had spoke at the hearing outset. Good morning, Mr. Lubischer. You spelled your name earlier, so you don't need to do that again.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
You spelled your name for me. Actually, what was your first name? Mr. Lubischer, what was your first name?
Joseph,
okay. May I already have gotten that, I can't recall. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
I do.
Thank you. And then if you could, do you reside in the area or if you could provide an address?
I find the question a little bit offensive.
Okay, Mr.
Examiner, I've been working on the critical areas ordinance for almost 3 years, mm-hmm. and that's the, and adherence and compliance to that code is the primary focus of my comments.
Okay. You may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. One item has to do with stormwater conditions. This developer and DCD have proven unable to meet the stormwater manual conditions and prevent turbid discharges to salmon streams. There's a fairly extensive history of that with many stop work orders, evidently the largest and the longest period in the county's history. And I want to recommend that the condition be changed to require a licensed professional engineer with stormwater expertise to do the inspections, probably twice weekly or more during the wet season to ensure that BMPs are in place. Okay. In regard to the request for postponement, there was one new piece of information in the staff report, attachment E. That was not in the record. I haven't found it in the portals. It's not addressed in the staff report. It makes changes to the mitigation plans, and it's not applied in the civil engineering reports, plans. And that is part of the reason that I was concerned about the dating of these engineering plans. I mean, that's really basic. The staff report has got to point us to the documents that you're using to make a decision and not allow revisions in the future that have never been reviewed. Okay. This attachment E, oh, excuse me. Want to refer to Exhibit 4, which is a mitigation plan.
That's a December 2022. It refers to future adjustments to the mitigation plan. This is Exhibit 4-030. I've had limited time to review the staff report, but I don't think the staff report addresses if or when those future mitigations will be made, and I didn't see anything in the exhibit list. This huge hole. You can't leave, at this stage, you can't leave mitigation unspecified, right? A comment I made earlier was about something called the temporary impact theory. That was overruled by Examiner Olbrechts a little over a year ago. The staff report did not address my comment directly, right? But this was as a result of an appeals of the of an Arborwood project, and it found that the temporary impact theory, which you will find in the mitigation report, to be non-compliant with the code, and the examiner even used the word absurd. The staff's one-line comment indicated that because this was, the Arborwood was under the 2007 code at the time, that it does not apply to this case. And I will argue that is manifestly incorrect, because there's nothing in the code, subsequent codes, that ever permitted this idea of an encroachment without authorization or full mitigation. So these mitigation plans on this site have to work together. And we see that changes are being made here at the last minute in the mitigation plans. And as noted, they haven't made it to the engineering plans yet. I think that needs to be straightened out first with respect to this temporary impact, but also with the buffer averaging. This is something I haven't seen this before, but you know, buffer averaging is basically an idea where you can push buffer boundaries in and out. It'll take a little bit here, give a little bit there. There's an implication of equivalency, but in this case, what we see is a claim that you can reach this equivalency by enhancing a buffer. It makes no sense at all. It's not supported in the code in any way. In fact, if you go to the ecology guidance, they'll tell you that enhancement is considered a low success probability.
Mr. Lubisher, we're right at 6 minutes, so if you can wrap up, and I will be keeping the record open.
Well, restoration would be a much more appropriate level to reach. Also, the mitigation plans are required under 19700715 to address hydrology. You won't find that in the mitigation plans. And that's important, because if you're claiming that Wetland J, for example, up in the northwest part of the corner, is successfully mitigated by additions down gradient, that's not true. That's going to be a net hydrologic loss to that wetland.
All right, we're right at time. I'm going to keep the record open, but I'm going to need to move on to the next public comment.
How long are you going to keep it open?
I haven't decided yet.
We just got the staff report. I would ask you to have staff address some of these things, these missing reports especially? Because how can the public make proper comments?
I'm going to hear the rest of the public comment, and then I'm going to make a call on how long to keep the record open. And so if you have additional comment, anything else you want to bring to my attention, then you can submit that in writing, and that will all become part of
it. It's going to take some time.
Understood. Thank you, Mr. Lubacher. All right.
And then next up, we have Kathy Lustig.
You said Lustig?
Lustig, yes.
Lustig, okay. Ms. Lustig, could you spell your name for me?
Sure, it's Lustig, L-U-S-T-I-G.
Oh, okay, all right.
Lustig.
Lustig, right, okay, yeah. All right. Good morning. You swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
I do.
Thank you. And if you can let me know kind of where either your address or where you live in relation to the property.
Yeah, I live in East Bremerton, which is down 303. And I guess I can add a little bit about my background. Is one of my professions is a cartographer. So I'm a map maker. And I've studied a lot of the documents. I've worked for a lot of different types of disciplines. So I'm somewhat familiar with the spatial setup of this whole area. I guess what I want to ask you is to request, the community has concerns about earlier hearing examiner decisions that apparently there's no internal tracking system of decisions that you make and there's no enforcement of them. And I would just request that you perhaps review some of the earlier, all of the hearing examiner decisions that have been applied to date.
For this particular, the overall development
Yes.
here? Okay.
Because there's a concern about that is the roads. Our understanding is there was early decisions about certain things had to be agreed upon as far as the roads go. And before any permitting could be done, and then all of a sudden, all this grading is done without all the earlier decisions being followed. We've been told there's no internal tracking. I don't know. I'm assuming your decisions are legally binding decisions, and the county isn't tracking them. They aren't enforcing them. It's like chaos. So much is going on that the community is upset about. And I think the mention about at Glutz Pond Road, Mr. Olson said that it's almost approved. Well, I don't think anything should be decided till the roads are very clearly, there's an agreement how it's going to all work out. And I can say with all those apartments that are being put in there and about bus stops, there's maybe one bus stop that's down the road on the highway. Those are not safe. I mean, I personally worked for Kitsap Transit. I know where all those bus stops are. I don't see where there's any plan for a bus stop to be put in there at Glutz Pond Road, like a pullout, where all those apartments can be served, or at the main entrance. It really is not safe to have bus stops out on that highway. So I think that's something that should be considered when you're talking about adding such high density to this area. Is that safety concern alone for pedestrians. And I think it was brought to my attention that because this is an urban area, in an urban growth area, that private roads are not allowed in an urban area. I just am bringing up that concern that might be addressed. And from the overall perspective, me and one of the adjacent property owners who owns a farm, is we both worked together to put together a map that showed the 12 different large developments going in from East Bremerton up to Island Lake. I personally have been going and attending and watching North Prairie Water's board meetings. I know that there's an issue with capacity and infrastructure. And at some point, we have heard that they have not been able to give binding water agreements. I don't know what's been negotiated so far with Royal Valley and Rush, but we know there's issues down at the other developments going into Bremerton. And the other issue is the failing infrastructure of the sewage treatment plant. There's a big picture here that I'm hoping you can perhaps look at. And I think that what was decided in 2012 when this area was brought into the UGA and made senior homestead, Mr. Ross had a master plan of how it was supposed to be, and then he died, and then it totally changed. And now it's not anything like what was ever promised to the community when they bought into it. And they just want to pack in more houses and create such higher density and have all this beautiful farmland that's around it. It's not compatible to be adding this kind of high density into this phase two. And that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lustig.
There are no more speakers signed up on the list, but there are attendees online, some of whom I assume would wish to talk. So there should be a virtual raise hand feature. If you wish to provide public comment, go ahead and click that, and we'll try and call speakers in order of raised hand, but we'll get to everybody who wishes to speak online.
Just to know, I got a note from the AAV room to move my speaker closer. I'll get another note if this doesn't work, but
Thank you.
And let's see. So, Ms. Jones, I don't believe anybody's responded. No one else online to comment?
We have two raised hands currently, so I'll pull over the first person, Rick Coons. Should see him momentarily. Perfect.
Right. Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, Mr. Coons, I can hear you. And is that K-U-H-N-S? Is that the correct spelling of your name?
That is correct.
All right. I'm going to swear you in. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
I do.
Thank you. So I can hear you just fine. You do have your video monitor off, so I can't see you, but that is fine. You could submit comment that way, but I did want to let you know.
Okay.
And also, if you can kind of either provide your address or let me know kind of where in the area you reside with relation to that project.
Yeah, I just live to the west of Central Valley Road, and I'm right off of Northwest Paulson Road.
Okay.
Yeah.
You may proceed.
We've lived there over almost 40 years.
Okay.
Okay. My question is I understand that the DCD did not require a hydrology report with this development. And my question is what is the threshold that the DCD uses to, you know, go ahead and cause developers to address that issue? And lessons learned is that Island Lake, that the developments that were put in there caused a significant impact to the aquifer, such that there's a moratorium which still exists today, such that no more wells can be drilled in that area because of the impact. It continues to lower the Island Lake level, okay? So, and I didn't know who to contact as far as how that should be done, but it seems like the impact, since this is a critical area for the recharge, has already been addressed. We've lived here for, and many other residents have lived here for quite a long time. What could be the potential impact if no hydrology report has been done? For these private wells that we own, such that just like the Island Lake issue, what happens when the aquifer is affected and our wells go dry? Who addresses that? Is that just strictly that each private individual then has to address that? Or is there some other way, you know, to address it before that actually happens, I guess is what I'm asking. So that's my comment.
Okay. We'll be bringing the applicant back up, and then the planning department may also have a comment on that question. on the water supply
thank
issue.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Coons. Is there anyone else online who would like to comment?
Yes, we have Charm Walker, and I will pull them over now.
Okay. All right.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Your video monitor is off, and that's fine, but I did want to let you know about that.
Yes.
And then the spelling on your name, I assume that's correct as it is on your on the screen?
Yes, it's a longer first name, but I'm not sure if you need that. Do you want me to spell
that? Well, yeah, let's go ahead and get your full first name.
Okay, it's C-H-A-R, M like Michael, I-O-N like Nancy.
Oh, okay. All right, well, good morning, Ms. Walker. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
I do.
Thank you. And before you proceed, if you could just let me know kind of where in the area you live with relation to the project.
I am directly across the street from the Development 1. I am near the Peninsula Bible Church.
Okay. Thank you. You may proceed when you are ready.
Okay. My questions, I will keep my time short if possible. One, are there any recent reports that clarify the statements by the applicant? Let me rephrase that. Are there any new reports that specify what North Perry Water has clarified in the safety and the viability and sustainability for the new development that is already in progress and the new development that is being proposed, for example? And my second question is, are there any new reports from the Transportation Department regarding adding stoplights on Highway 303, which impacts all of the residents on the southern side of Highway 303, which are facing the new developments, because we will not be able to get out of our driveways. We can barely get out now. And so we'd like to just clarify if there have been any new reports that have been approved for additional safety and traffic.
Okay. I'll have the applicant and our department to address those questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Walker. All right. Is there anyone else online who would like to comment on this proposal?
And remember, if you wish to speak, use the virtual raise hand feature, and I will pull you over to talk. Okay, no takers.
Okay. All right, let the record reflect that there is no one else online who would like to comment on the proposal. So at this point, we'll turn back to the applicant. I think there were a number of questions that arose. So if the applicant could address those, that would be helpful. Mr. Olson, I swore you in earlier. You remained under oath.
Thank you. We're finding out if Robin is going to, Robin Myers, the biologist, is planning on testifying.
Okay.
But I will respond to a couple of the comments or a few of the comments that have been addressed. Cindy Allpress, she talked about there's no confidence in the county DCD and because of the phase one construction. And I can tell you that I've been an engineer designing projects big and small for years and years. And when you have a winter that when there's 7 or 10 consecutive days of heavy, heavy rainfall, it gets to a point where it's difficult to control, and I think it was brought up a couple times that there was some violations from the Department of Ecology, and those are unfortunate, but they happen on construction sites, and we have all the confidence with DCDs.
Is it now in compliance? Have those issues been addressed?
Oh yes. Mr. Lubachev, I know he's focused a lot on the mitigation, and you know, this, as I had said, this you know, this project overall, and if you include Royal Valley Area 1, Area 2, includes, it's a major area with, and the mitigation cannot be final when you're in preliminary plat status. And it is an evolving thing, and it's approved, and you know, it's a reviewed and approved by staff, and it's taken very seriously. And Robin Myers is one of the most known biologists in the area. She's respected, and she knows what she's doing when it comes to this. Kathy Lustin said, when I made the comment of the Gludes intersection almost approved, it's approved by WashDOT and the county in the way the design is going to be, but the way the process works is you have to go through a design review process with WashDOT. So we know it's going to be a right-in, right-out, but we're in the process of getting it fully approved so we can actually build it. So that's when I said it almost approved. There won't be occupancy of the units until that intersection is built. So.
And then I think there was a question on, and this is somewhat related to this question, that's why I raise it, but on the kind of access for larger vehicles.
Oh, yes.
And that's may be lower down in your...
Andy Owens, yes. And definitely the intersection will be designed to for large semi-trucks. I mean, we have to comply with the Kitsap County Road Standards on the design of intersections. Now, I can feel for if large trucks are coming in now, because it is a construction site, I could see that, you know, working around the existing, you know, might be a problem, but it should be temporary. And when these roads are done completed as agreed, you know, with WashDOT and with Kitsap County,
there won't be an access issue then for the larger trucks. Or delivery trucks, or you use the word semi, so that is pretty large.
Yeah. So Mr. Coons, he said there's no hydrology report. Now there's people often mix up hydrology, meaning stormwater runoff, and then you know, hydrogeology, meaning how much water is getting, you know, into the ground, into the water table. And we can say that the way that these this ground has been used for over the years for farming, there was lake deposits of soils, very silty. It's very hard for the water to go into the ground as it is. The Kitsap County does not require, for this use, Jeff Smith touched on it, for this use, for this residential use, they do not require a hydrogeologist analysis, because the impacts have been shown not to be significant for that, especially with the existing conditions as it is with the farming. But there, you know, as far as a stormwater report, storm drainage report, you know, the hydrology, you know, has been shown to be, or it's been designed for the construction phase. And like I said, yes, unfortunately, so there was certain storms that were so intense, they go beyond what the design storm is during a construction season. But as far as the finished product, if you were to look at a map and all the ponds are blue, it looks like, I don't know, I think there's maybe 10 ponds. It looks almost more blue than it does develop. The ponds are significant.
And the water purveyor is North Perry Avenue Water District, correct?
North Perry Water District.
Okay. I don't know what the avenue might be.
Yeah,
like.
Not the avenue. Yeah.
Okay.
Is it?
Oh, that is correct, with an avenue?
Is it?
Okay, all right.
I guess I never use it.
And they have adequate water supply then to provide the project?
Well, for this project, yes. Mm-hmm. And all the projects associated with this. There's other projects that we're working on, like a fire station, new fire station. That one has water. There are certain projects where there's questions that are not related to this one.
Okay, so if projects later on down the pipeline, there may be issues of that with their planning.
Yeah, and they're taking care to look at what they can supply, the capacity, what they can and can't supply. And that's where the water availability certifications come in. It was brought up about the sewer. This project has paid for a new sewer pump station, and it's paid for rebuilding 24-inch sewer mains. I mean, there's a significant amount of resources being added to the Kitsap County's wastewater treatment system by this project. And so, was that it?
Oh, the bus stop. How is public transit? Do you have any comments on there was a question on that.
Yeah, unfortunately, to put a bus stop on SR 303 is not the right thing to do. And I think that was noted by the public. To bring Kitsap Transit to come into the development, that's at this point, that's not that's not a proposal, but that doesn't mean that can't happen. Kitsap Transit, at this point, it's not.
And are there any, you had mentioned, I think, on stormwater, that issue with the phase one has been resolved. Are there any other enforcement issues that are out there for phase one?
No, there was we delayed on phase one. We changed the phasing plan a little, for the future divisions, and to allow certain areas to not have to be disturbed as much while it was still wet. So, but it was not that was not an issue brought up by the state or DOE. I can tell you that this is not a project where the applicant hasn't spent a significant amount of money. They have stormwater treatment during the winter, filtering stormwater. People that know or that are in the business understand the expense of that monthly. It's a lot. And, like I said, unfortunately, there was some periods of time where the design storm for a temporary stormwater control system during construction, that design storm was exceeded.
I think there was also a question on the completion of fencing near the apartments I guess it wasn't completed, or I don't know if you're...
It would be Mandy. Mandy's buffer or her, the landscape strip between the apartments and her place. I don't know that there is a fence proposed for that.
I think this was with the original, the phase one approval. So it's not the proposal before me.
No, this is with Glued's apartments.
Okay.
So not phase one, area one. It's Glued's apartments. So it's going on, it's going on construction now. So
okay.
It's not, you're right, it's not associated with this project.
Will the fencing then be complete? So it's mid-construction, but the fencing will ultimately be completed then? Or I just have clarification on that.
At this point...
Screening buffer. Yeah, it was between Glued's and Ms. Owens. But but there's no fence.
Yeah, the there's no fence. There's a fence proposed around the pond, but there's no fence proposed between Ms. Owens and Glutes Apartments. But again, that is a different owner, a different project.
Okay.
When I showed it on the map, I was showing how, you know, all the access for all of Royal Valley and Glutes was working together.
Yeah.
I didn't mean that this phase two. Area to preliminary plat performance-based development is controlling Glutes Apartments, Glutes Pond Apartments.
Okay. Anything else?
Now, can we ask Robin if she's planning on testifying?
Yes, I can pull her over as a panelist. I see her in the online room, so I'll pull her over now.
What's that mean?
You'll be able to see her on the screen, I mean. Sorry. I should have clarified. I'm pulling her over as a panelist so she's able to speak during the hearing, and it looks like she's unmuted, so.
Robin?
Yeah, so you might need to talk right now.
Hi, Ms. Myers, good morning. I can hear you. I don't see you, but it's not necessary that I see you as long as I can hear you. That's the main thing. I'm going to go ahead and swear you in because it sounds like you may be providing some testimony. If you can state your name for the record.
It's Robin Myers, R-O-B-B-Y-N, and Myers is M-Y-E-R-S.
And you swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
I do.
Thank you. So, Ms. Myers, I didn't know, was there anything specific that you wanted to address to follow up on Mr. Olson's comment? Or Mr. Yeah. Olson, I didn't know if you had specific questions.
I just wanted to make sure that if she did want to follow up, that she was that she had the chance, the opportunity. As far as what I wanted to cover, as far as their testimony, I've gotten there. So, Robin, are we good on the where we stand on the discussion of mitigation and the fact that it's you know at a preliminary plat there's usually a conceptual is what we're talking about as far as mitigation and especially on this project since it is comprehensive, and that's where, you know, Glutes Apartments and Area 1 and this project are all considered, you know.
Yeah, so if I can take some time here, after hearing the testimony and the presentations of Norm and Jeff Smith, it's almost like you should have started with me, but we'll save the best for last. Do we have the exhibits? I'm not sure what Norman gave you, but is there the
Yeah, I do have all the exhibits, and I know there is a report from you in there. I'm not sure which exhibit number that is, but I do have analysis from you. I know I saw that in there.
I'd love it if we could get it up on the screen. It's a replacement from the staff report. Staff report, the only exhibit from any of my documents in the staff report, I think page 44 or something.
I know there's a critical area assessment at exhibit 4.
Exactly. So we should have had an updated one. It's updated January 5th, 2026. Added to the record.
Hey, Robin, they're being brought up right now.
Okay, thanks.
And you said the updated one, that is January 6, 2026?
January 5th, 2026.
January 5th, 2026, okay.
I'll fill this void by adding that I'm a senior professional wetland scientist. I'm certified by the Society of Wetland Scientists Professional Certification Program, which is internationally recognized. I've been working in this county for almost 30 years, and I actually live in Bremerton, just right down the street from this project. So, Well, we value of time, so I'll go ahead and get started. You know, we're waiting for that exhibit to be replaced. So when I started this project long time ago, when we went through hearing, like any project, you start identifying where you've got the crowdedness with critical areas and buffers. This project was no different than any others. That's not what I'm looking for.
Oh, okay.
Can I share?
You should be able to. Let me see.
I'm sorry, there's a procedural question from the audience. The record is open, so yes, we can, and that is for the public as well, and I'll address that at the end. And just for the record, because we may not have caught that, there was a comment from the public on whether it's appropriate to bring in additional items into the record which hadn't been submitted earlier. And this may have been. We are still verifying that. I don't know if it has been or not.
Robin, is this document the one that you're speaking about?
Yes, it is.
It is?
Yes.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
Is there an exhibit number on that? Yeah, yes.
I'm not quickly seeing it, so we could admit it as 42, perhaps.
Okay. Well, it's just in case it's not already in the record. It may be. The record is fairly voluminous at this point. I think, approaching 900 pages, something like that.
Yeah.
So we will mark Exhibit 42 as the updated critical areas report, January 5, 2026. And we won't need to put it there if it's already in there, but just in case, that will be 42. So, Ms. Myers, you may go ahead and proceed when you're ready.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much. So as we're developing this and looking at this as a larger project, not just like development area 1 and 2, this is a whole Royal Valley plat. The preliminary drawings and all the design that goes into it, we identified areas that were being crowded. That would be up, like if you look at this exhibit, it'd be the box labeled as 3. The box labeled as 4, we knew 5 was an issue, and then we eventually rolled in Glutes apartments and working on some other mitigation there. As we went through the preliminary plat, provided a mitigation report, which is in the record, it became pretty apparent pretty quickly that this project was going to be a bit to manage regarding critical areas. So we proposed to the county to do a master mitigation plan, which is developed to really help provide a comprehensive, coordinated, and transparent framework. So we identified the impacts up front. Like I said, box 3 we knew was gonna happen, 4, 5. And so we applied with the original mitigation plan, the programmatic approach for clarity and consistency of the goals, the performance standards, the monitoring protocol. They were consistent and with the critical area ordinance and have just kind of been rolled into any other report we've done thus far. And when I mean a master mitigation plan, you're looking at it. It's a liquid document. Every time we get something done, we update this plan. As you can see here, like area 1's been implemented, it's planted, area 4 is planted, 5 is done, everything else is kind of in the docket. When we came in with impacts at area 3, that was adjusted from the original plat because the final design from the original to what gets done, you know, minor field adjustments are expected and we manage them, track them and document them and provide as-builts. As-built is completed for Area 1 and 4 and 5. So this was our concept, and it's very robust. It's very comprehensive. We really kind of take charge of making sure that all mitigation is done, and then we roll that over to the county and say, here's what we've got. It's consistent with the code. The only time we would really have a larger documented process would be if it was a significant change. So this will go into the email you received yesterday regarding there was a significant change in the mitigation, wasn't consistent with the civil plans, and that rolls back to the record that you saw, and that's in the staff report, which was one of those changes where we changed the planting area shown in number two here. It was on the west side. We shifted it to the east side. That was after several talks and meetings with the neighborhood, with the property owners. So we just showed that and submitted that to the county. Said this is where we're planting. Unfortunately, I'm fallible, and I kind of just threw it on the opposite side of the property line. So I showed it when the first amendment came in. I showed it to be in the development area. Well, if you look at it, that's patently obviously not where it was supposed to go. So when the as-built was done, it pushed the planting area back over into the buffer area. So that's where the problem with the civils don't line up with what's shown up on what was presented in the staff report is, and it's an antiquated mitigation plan. So I hope that clears up that issue. So know that anything that's kind of larger here, the four and the five has already been done. It's been our certificate of compliance. It's complete with the Army Corps of Engineers. We're still working on some nicks and tucks over in that area, the blue area over by five. And really all that we anticipate, I want to address, because I really am sensitive to the comments that it doesn't seem to be transparent and like, that not all impacts are really being taken care of. And I really just want to emphasize that that's not the case. I've got some notes here for you.
And Ms. Myers, just to clarify, so the CAO report that I should be reviewing is the current one, the January 5th, 2026 exhibit, now exhibit 42. Is that correct?
That encompasses the mitigation for development area.
Okay. Yeah. And that encompasses the changes that you just described.
Yes. The only changes are really in area two.
Okay.
Where I misplaced the planting area.
Okay. But it's correct on the January 5th report, correct?
It is.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. So what's come in too on the civil set, we have, some additional impacts shown, just nicks and tucks on the outer edges of buffers. That's shown on a plan by Normals and Associates, where we anticipate these small impacts in development area too. Those, when you add all those up, they're about 1,911 square feet of impacts. These could all easily be just added or defined as being intrusions into the 15-foot building setback, but we're acknowledging them as impacts and going to provide mitigation accordingly to the critical area ordinance. So those are some additional impacts, and you'll see them. I don't know if Liliana could put up that exhibit, and I don't think that it's important now. What's important is in the record is that we're showing we're going to still have a few hits to some buffers, but they're going to land on this master mitigation plan and be mitigated accordingly. So those are additional impacts to be dealt with, is the just under 2,000 square feet. And so to follow up on that, what is that going to look like? So Mr. Lubisher commented on restoration versus enhancement. Reason that this project is really simply implemented with a master mitigation program is because it's a clean slate. Everything is degraded. Mostly everything is degraded, and you have an opportunity to enhance or restore. It's a fine line between what restoration is versus enhance. Enhance means you're enhancing a current buffer to a critical area. Restoring it means that you're restoring something that's not a buffer to a critical area or is in a critical area. So you're actually adding something that removes it from being a critical area and a buffer, but he and I can talk that out over coffee one day. So the same implementation is happening. You're restoring habitat. You're regaining habitat and improving all of the functions and values that go with the buffers and the wetlands all throughout this project. So I think that is my summary, other than we do have, I did want to touch base on the changes to the conditions that Norm started with and I skipped over, or he skipped over the ones that were relevant to critical areas. And they would be, conditions 38, 40, and 41. Condition 38 is basically that reference citation to mitigation. I've written a lot of reports for site-specific actions and larger actions on this entire property and the apartments. So I understand the confusion of tracking things, but the mitigation implemented, it really comes out of that final mitigation plan, Connector Road and Glutes Pond Street report. And so I changed the language to state that report is being specific to Development Area 1. And then in addition to that is Norman's civil plan, the stream and wetland mitigation plan for the development area 2. Both of those should be in the record. My report dated 2024 and Norm's is 2026. So that condition that basically says all the plat has to comply with the performance standards mitigation measures set forth in those two documents. So that just is giving us the accountability and responsibility to address any impacts that are known or anticipated for Development Area 2. Then secondly is Condition 40. Just tried to slim it down. That's just kind of repetitive in the requirements of mitigation, you know, for monitoring, maintenance, survival rates. So kind of slimmed that down and recited the mitigation plan for, you know, ease of interpretation of what we're really trying to answer there with condition 40. And then 41, I think Norman touched on how we were actually implementing the critical area buffer signs versus split rail fencing. So that is all I've got on my list. If you have any questions.
I do not. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Myers. All right. Is there anything else from the applicants? Okay. All right. Mr. Smith, is there anything from the department?
Jeff Smith, Kitsap County DCD. Just kind of do a 5,000-foot level as far as the questions that were brought up.
And, you know, before I forget, if you could just, while the record remains open, if you could just check the revised, I mean, first, if you have, let me know if you have any comments on the revised conditions, but also to check to make sure the referenced reports that are referenced in the conditions, particularly these applicants' revised conditions, but just make sure they're in the record so I have them, so I can take a look at those.
Sure, we'll do that.
And I assume the dates on these are correct, but might be a good idea to check that.
I assume staff will prepare something to
address the conditions. Yeah, I think that would be helpful, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. as far as the first thing is that staff looked up on the internet and we did look at the approved landscape plan for Glude's Pond apartments, and there is a fence proposed on the landscape plan.
Okay.
But like the, I want to make clear is that there's a lot of balls being juggled in the air right now. There's there's a lot of construction going on. And a lot of these elements or components have not been implemented yet.
Okay, so not all. It's,
so
okay.
This goes for Area 1. It also goes with the connector road and as well as the apartment complex. There's a lot of. And also the transportation improvements that the Washington State Department of Transportation will have say as far as how things are going to be constructed, how things are going to get permitted, and the developers working with them closely. And as like Ms. Myers brought up, that there's a lot of, based on the construction, and there's going to be what we call an LSUB. It's a subdivision site development activity permit. A lot of these things are going to be perfected as we go along, as far as where engineering and mitigation locations are going to be more in line. This, by county rules, this is preliminary, and it's supposed to be 60% design. But we're going to, as we go along, we're going to perfect that information on the site plan. Another thing I wanted to address is public transit. I've had conversations, staff has had conversations with Kitsap Transit. And there is a transit route on SR 303. Might not go the right direction, but there is one. And at this point in time, they're not proposing one, but the
stop, you mean?
Yeah, stop. Yeah, but things are fluid. They'll, you know, they have to take a look at what their market's doing. And I've also contacted Central Kitsap School District, and as far as a bus stop along SR 303, the Washington State Department of Transportation was kind of cold on that, because they're concerned about traffic safety and far as to the children. So that'll have to be re-looked at far as. I've not received any feedback from Central Kitsap School District far as what their plan B will be, but that hopefully will.
But they'll need a plan B to address that safety issue.
Yeah, exactly. And the hydrogeologic report is, the North Prairie Avenue Water District prepared a water system plan that was reviewed and approved by Ecology and Washington State Department of Health.
Yep.
They're approved for so many water rights, and they're approved for so many connections. This project is within the retail water service area. As far as where development can go, and it's supposed to be in alignment with the Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan and urban growth areas, as far as providing a level of service, urban areas, and et cetera. Right now, the hydrogeologic report isn't required for this because they've already forecasted out as far as the number of possible connections. However, as it was noted, that there hasn't been a binding water letter that I know of being issued yet, but there's been a preliminary non-binding letter.
That's in the record, correct?
Let's
put that, if it's not, let's get that, let's add that to the
and
record.
And I know the developer has been working with the water district to try to nail down as far as that's all work, how that's working out. And what they normally do is they enter in some development agreement as far as. And I think that's been addressed. I think everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, I'd like to see the preliminary one. So, Mr. Olson, if that could be added to the record.
Yeah, and I know people might be concerned about what's going on the south side of SR 303, but parts of that is in the city of Bremerton, retail water service area.
Right, yeah.
So they're two different areas. There was a comment about private roads and urban growth areas. You can have private roads or public roads in urban growth areas. And in some developments, when you have a performance-based development, all the roads are private. But this developer is working with the county to construct roads to county standards. So if roads are not going to be accepted or proposed to be public, there's usually the option to provide that in the future, as far as it being accepted into the road network. As far as Mr. Lubischer's comments, I'll need to see more information when he submits, as far as what areas are not in compliant. I know that there is probably not a lot of time to prepare comments, but it'll be helpful to see what areas, as far as the mitigation plan, are not in compliance with Kitsap County Code. And there is some acknowledgement that this project has been going on for a significant amount of time delayed, and developers had to deal with many storm events. And a lot of times when you're in the construction stage, there's a lot of you discover things that you didn't think were there, but you have to mitigate or do improvements to address those issues, which could be anything. So anyway, do you have any other questions?
On the route to schools, would that be in the traffic report? And maybe this is a question for the applicant.
Route to schools?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a standing element or component of the traffic impact analysis.
Yeah.
To my knowledge, there isn't any school that's in the vicinity that most likely the kids will be bused.
Okay, so it'll be busing. Yeah. Busing. Yeah, that's what I figured, but okay. All right, I think that's it. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Smith. All right, so we do need to keep the record open on this proposal. Just there's been a number of questions that were raised. I'm thinking at least a week, maybe two. And then that gives an opportunity for some of the questions from the public may be able to confer with the applicant after the hearing too. If there are some questions that can be addressed, that would be great. And then by keeping the record open, what I mean is citizens, anyone, you can submit any written comment either as a result of your conversation with the applicant or anything that needs to be brought to my attention, you can submit that to the record. And likewise for the applicant, if there's anything additional that comes up in those conversations or from the hearing today that should be brought to my attention, that would be helpful. And I think the planning department had mentioned that there may be some clarifications with an updated memo from the planning department that would be submitted. So I think given that I'm a question, maybe 2 weeks might be appropriate for this. So I don't know. Today's the 28th.
That would be June 11th is 14 days from today.
June 11th. Thank you. All right. So we'll keep the record open through June 11th. Yes, there's a procedural question in the back.
I'm number two on the list. I just have some questions.
Oh, did you not have, yeah, that's right. You did not comment. So, okay. Did we miss you? Okay. So a little unusual, but yes. all right. And what was your name?
Viral Battellini.
Can you spell that?
You want both names?
Both, everything.
V-E-R-L-E.
Okay.
Battaglini, B-A-T-T-A-G-L-I-N-I.
L-I-N-I. So, you said, so, help me on the pronunciation.
Battaglini.
Battaglini.
The G's silent, unless you're Italian.
Okay. Gotcha. I'm not. Sorry. So, Ms. Bellini, do you swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
I do.
Thank you. And if you can kind of let me know where you reside in relationship to the project.
I'm off Clear Creek Road down in Shadow Glen.
Okay.
I'm a resident of Kitsap County for 76 years.
That's impressive.
Anyway, so I just had a couple questions. Knowing that this was a wetland, was there any thought to any water reclamation, whatever those purple pipes are called? My other question is, if you go from 50 multifamily to 276 multifamily, why does that not need an infrastructure or an impact environmental, whatever? My other question is groundwater, the contaminants from cars, chemicals in people's yards, is that taken into consideration? And my other question is, why an outdoor pool in this area? And are the tennis courts and the whatever courts, are they outdoor? There's no sense in having outdoor stuff in our area. I think that's it for my questions.
All right.
Oh, the buffer. I am concerned about the buffer zone. How can you say the forest is going to take care of the amount of land that's buffer zone when a buffer zone means a separation between what's there?
Okay. All right.
I think that's it for me.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I've noted your questions there, and then the applicant department can address those kind of in supplemental materials, unless, Mr. Olson, there's anything you wish to add right now. Okay.
Yes, unfortunately, if Silverdale Water was serving this, we probably would have purple pipe on there. Oh. Silverdale Water has a purple pipe running up Paulson, but it does not serve this development. And I think we talked about the groundwater contamination with the, you know, with the use and stuff. So, and an outdoor pool. I agree. What is it? Maybe this isn't Arizona, but still, it's nice for the kids.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Okay. Like I said, I'm sorry. Ms. Jones, you said June 11, correct? 2 weeks out?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So, the record will be open until June 11, and you can email those comments to the clerk.
My email is lrjones@kitsap.gov, which is spelled lrjones@kitsap.gov.
Thank you, Ms. Jones. And if you all did not get that, you can certainly clarify with Ms. Jones after the hearing. Also, I noted this at the outset. But since I did not get your email addresses live, just be sure Ms. Jones has the correct spelling, correct information, so you can get a copy of the decision. And that the timing on that comes out 10 business days after the record is closed. So you count from June 11 and then 10 business days from that is when that comes out. All right, I think that's it. Are there any procedural questions from anyone? Okay. All right. Thank you all very much for your appearances today and for your testimony. I have a lot to look at. This is a voluminous record, and I know there's much more to come in. I know there were a lot of questions that raised, so I will be taking a close look at everything. Including the material yet to come. So thank you again. I'm sorry. What was there a procedural question back there?
I did not get your name. I'm sorry.
Oh, Examiner Drummond. So, yeah, I'm the Kitsap County Hearing Examiner.
Spell your name.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's Drummond, Drummond. Yes. All righty. Well, I think with that... thank you all. We are adjourned.
Thank you, Hearing Examiner.